of relationships.
And as Jews, we know that we have a guide to life. What is our guide to life? Our guide to life is called the Torah. It's called the Torah. The Torah is... What Torah means is teachings. Or from the word more or morah. I'm sure we went to Hebrew school, we know about a more is a teacher, and morah is a teacher, feminine teacher. So the Torah means teachings. It's a book of teaching. What does it teach us about? So most of us, when we think about the Torah, we think about rituals. Do this, don't do this, do this, don't do this. We don't know that the first one-fifth of the Torah is all about relationships. The first book, one whole book of five books of Moses, is totally about relationships. There are very, very few commandments in this book. And basically what it does is it discusses details, and most of these relationships, unfortunately, are negative relationships. So what it's teaching us is we have to learn by other people's mistakes. My father always used to teach me, listen son, he says, this is what I did in my life. You've got to learn from my mistakes. We have to learn from the positive in people, but we also have to learn from other people's mistakes. And Pirkei Avot tells us, Ezehu Chacham, who is a wise person? Halomed mikol adam. A person who learns from other people. You can learn good from other people, and you can learn how to do good by learning from other people's mistakes. The Bible, in the first book, the book of Genesis, the book of Bereshit, teaches us by telling us, look, these guys, look at all the people who made mistakes. We're going to go through the whole list. It's amazing how people made mistakes. So today's topic is positive relationships. And the Torah is our handbook for life. And it really emphasizes a lot of mistakes people made in their relationships. And the truth is, the whole first book of Genesis, right to the end, deals with failed relationships. And then right at the end, we find mended relationships. We have failed relationship, until we find at the end of the book, Joseph and his brothers reconcile. Right at the end of the book of Genesis. So if you ask me, what is the book of Genesis about? So there's a couple of things it talks about. Number one, it talks about the creation of the world. Number two, it talks about the formation of a nation, Abraham and his descendants. And number three, it talks about relationships. It talks about failed relationships, and it talks about positive relationships. And that's going to be our class tonight. As we mentioned a couple of weeks back, the significance of the Magen David. Remember the significance of the Magen David? Star of David. We said it's made from two triangles. And we said the triangle symbolizes different things. Number one is upper, our relationship with God. Our relationship with other people, and our relationship with ourselves, inner. But you can also say that inner part is also talking about relationships with our families. The relationship with God, relationship with our families, and relationship with other people. And this works on a private individual basis, and this works on a national basis as well. That's why you have two triangles. So the national basis is our relationship with each other as Jews, in terms of the nation itself. That's our family, our relationship with each individual Jew, and our relationship with God. Everything has a structure. And what we want to have to talk about, when we talk about relationships, is it's not just relationships in the family, it's also relationships with other people outside the family. And it's also relationships with God. There's three kinds of relationships. Relationship with God, relationship with our family, and relationship with society in general. The three kinds of relationship we have to discuss. When we discuss these three relationships, where do we turn to for guidance? Let's turn to our own book. Let's see what our book talks about. The first scenario the Bible talks about is Adam and Eve. Okay? Seems to be a nice story. We all learned it when we were kids. And we have this old childhood memories of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, and most people will tell you they ate the apple. The truth is, the Torah doesn't mention apples anywhere. It just says there's a tree of knowledge, and they ate the fruit of the tree of knowledge, whatever that was. But we find, right at the beginning, there's a miscommunication. The snake comes to Eve, and the snake tells Eve, obviously it wasn't a real snake. And Sadia Gaon points out, there's no snake that walks and talks. It wasn't a snake as we view a snake today. We view a snake today and we think that was a snake. That's not the snake that we're talking about. It's a different creature, whatever it was. The Torah calls it a snake. The Torah calls it a snake, and the snake asks Eve. Says, tell me, he says, what did God tell you about this tree? And he says, God said, don't touch it and don't eat from it. And whoever touches it will die. So we find over here, And the rabbis point this out, that God did not tell Adam not to touch the tree. What did God tell Adam? Not to eat from the tree. She all of a sudden adds, God says not to touch the tree and not to eat from the tree. Where does she get that addition from? The rabbis say Adam, when he talked to his wife, she never heard God's command. She wasn't created yet. He was alone by that time. Now when Eve is created, Adam warns Eve. And Adam adds a fence around the Torah from his own head. He adds an extra law. And he said, God says, don't eat it, don't touch it. He added the don't touch it. So what happens? The snake pushes her against the tree. So look, you touch the tree, God says you're going to die if you touch the tree, right? So yeah, that's what Adam told me. Nothing happened, right? No, nothing happened. So now you can eat it. See, the first problems caused to mankind was because of miscommunication. One of the issues the Torah is bringing out over here is miscommunication. How many relationships are ruined because people do not communicate with each other? How many mistakes are made because people do not communicate with each other? Here we find one of the major ideas of relationships and positive relationships is communication, and we find that's what the Torah is telling us right at the beginning. Let's move on a bit. Cain and Abel, two brothers. It's amazing how Torah starts off with all these lousy relationships, terrible relationships. Cain and Abel, two brothers. They didn't know, they didn't learn yet, the brothers should love each other. Love your fellow man as yourself. They didn't learn that yet. They didn't have that idea yet. What happens? What are they fighting over? So the Bible, a simplistic account. The Bible says God accepted the offering of Abel, and God did not accept the offering of Cain. But obviously it's something deeper than that. So Midrash gives different opinions of what they were really fighting about. Midrash says, number one, they were fighting about land. Here's Cain and Abel. Imagine, two people inherit the whole earth. Right? They're going to inherit their father, whole land. You think they wouldn't have much to fight about. Wrong. That's when people fight more. When people have more ground, that's when they want more ground. When they have a lot of territory, they want everything. So Cain and Abel are fighting. Midrash says, number one, they're fighting about land. Number two, the Midrash says, they are fighting about who they're going to marry. Apparently there are other women as well, who were created at the same time, and there were three women created. There's two men. Now they're fighting, who's going to get the extra girl? So, I mean, this is, talk about relationships, you know, what do people fight about today? The guys in the bar, what do they fight about? The old cowboy movies, what do they fight about? What is all the fighting about? If you find relationships, nothing much has changed. The Torah is already talking about relationships right at the beginning, in terms of how we deal with each other. The third scenario is a more societal scenario. The flood scenario. What does the Bible tell us about the flood scenario, about relationships? It says, "Vatimmale ha'aretz chamas." The whole world was full of chamas. What is chamas? Violent robbery. What is violent robbery? When people don't respect each other, they rob and they kill each other. If I don't respect you, and there's no law and order, there's no police force in those days, there's no FBI, there's no NYPD or whatever it is. So what happens? When there's no law and order, what happens? When there's no respect for each other, it says, what is it? We find in the Talmud says, we as Jews have to pray for the welfare of the country and the government every week. In our Shabbat service, there's a prayer for the government. Over here we say it in English. One of the few prayers we say in English is the prayer for the government. Why do we pray for the government? The Talmud says, it says, if it wasn't for the government, if it wasn't for the law and order of society, a man would swallow up his neighbor alive. Let's think about that a bit. There's no law and order. In some places, you don't see many policemen. And you go to some areas and you think, you know, you've got to watch behind you all the time. Why? Because there's a breakdown in law and order in that area. If there's a breakdown in law and order, what's going to happen? If there's no respect for fellow men, people are going to kill each other. For small things, not big things. The guy was killed because they wanted his gold chain. They just shot him. He was helping to change one teacher's tire in the high school or whatever it was. And they came along, give me a chain? No. Shot him. Why? There's no respect for each other. The Bible is telling us right over there, in the story of the flood, "Vatimmale ha'aretz chamas." Society cannot exist, cannot operate properly, if relationships are having a problem. Societal relationships. People with each other, there's no respect for each other. A person does not respect his fellow man, society is not going to work very well. So that's number two. That's the flood generation. The next story the Torah tells us is story of the Tower of Babel. Now again, we read the story. What happened to the Tower of Babel? It says after the flood, a couple of generations later, what happened? People decided they're going to build a tower. And they're going to build a tower, it says, to make themselves a name. And God looks down and he sees the tower and he says, what are the men, what are mankind trying to do? And he goes down and changes the language. It became known as the Tower of Babel. But that's where the name Babylon came from. Or in English, there's a word Babel. A babel of voices. Where did it come from? It came from the Tower of Babel. So we have, there are hints in history about previous events. The word Babel, in Hebrew Babylon is Babel. Where does it come from? From Tower of Babel. Tower of Babel. Now Babylon. Tower of Babel. So what happened to Tower of Babel? Why did God come down and change the language? Here we have an ideal society. This society is a society which is united. Because all mankind spoke one language. And they were living in the same area around the same town. So why does God come down and look at them and say, hey, what are they doing, these guys? What did they do wrong? Their relationships seemed to be perfect. They were living in harmony. They were treating each other with respect. They were doing something united, something which today we can only dream about. That the whole world is united, speaking one language, no more wars. That's really what the United Nations is really, that's their charter. Their charter is to make peace on earth. When did we have a society with peace on earth? When was it? The Tower of Babel. The Tower of Babel, we had a society where there was peace on earth and total unity. And not only total unity, but total unity around one cause. What do they want to do? They wanted to build a big tower going up to heaven. And there's various opinions. Why were they scattered? Why was their language changed? Rashi says because they wanted to fight with God. Their idea was to build a big tower. And they thought in their small minds they could go up to heaven and fight God. They thought God was in heaven. Okay, but that's a very simplistic idea. The Midrash goes into great detail. It tells us an amazing concept. It says, here was a society which was united. But what united them was the task at hand. In other words, what united them was not self-respect for each other. They didn't respect each other. They had a utilitarian approach. What does that mean? We have a mission to do. We have a job to do. Since we have to do this job, since you're part of the job, and you agree this is a very fundamental job, I'll respect you. Because I need your help. And I'll respect you too. Why? I need your help as well. We're all united around a common task. If you take away that common task, what's going to happen? The unity is going to dissolve. And the Midrash gives us a very poignant example. The Midrash says, they're building this big tower, right? What do they build it with? One of the inventions of that society was bricks. Because in Babylon, there's no stone. Everything is made of bricks. So they invented this idea of making bricks. They had a lot of clay. They made bricks. So very technologically advanced society. The first skyscraper in history. Tower of Babel. First skyscraper in history. What is it made of? Not concrete, but it's made of bricks. So Midrash says, the man is climbing now. The tower is very high. He's climbing up, round and round on the ladders. So he gets to the top. And all of a sudden, the brick falls down. The brick falls down and hits someone on the head down below and kills him. What are these guys doing? What should they be doing? They should be crying about loss of life. Wrong. They are crying about the loss of the brick. Human life is cheap. We respect each other. Why? Because we need each other. But what are we trying to do? We're trying to build a tower. So therefore, what do? They don't cry for loss of human life. Life is cheap. Life is replaceable. Bricks. Irreplaceable. Bricks we cannot replace. Life is cheap. Let me give you a little example. For example, this is just an example. There was a space rocket that crashed with a Challenger, right? Blew up. Now can you imagine some people, I'm not saying anyone did this, I'm just giving an example. Some people are crying for the people that died, other people are crying because of the mission that was destroyed. So that's the example over here. If you can imagine the Tower of Babel, instead of crying for the people that died in the destruction, they're crying because the rocket destroyed. The rocket, they spent millions of dollars on this rocket, it was meant to do so many things, and now we lost that opportunity. That's what the Tower of Babel was all about. The society, the relationship to the society was skewed. The love was dependent on something else. The Mishnah tells us in Pirkei Avot again. If love is dependent on some ulterior thing, on some ulterior motive, when that ulterior motive goes, the love goes. For example, people get married either for money or for looks. What happens? When the looks go, the guy's looking for the exercise. When the money goes, for sure the guy's going to exercise. So the ulterior motive for the Torah is telling us over here is a utilitarian approach to relationships. You rub my back, I'll rub your back. You don't rub my back, forget about it. Most marriages, 50% of modern marriages today are just dissolved. Why? Because the relationship doesn't have a solid foundation. The relationship is based on taking and what's in it for me, and that's what the Tower of Babel was all about in terms of a societal relationship. I want to be part of the society. Why? Because I like the goal of the society. If I don't like the goal of society, heck with the society. I don't need it. And that's one of the dangers, and that's what the Tower of Babel is all about. Then we come to fights between relatives, other relatives. Abraham. Who is Abraham? Our forefather, Abraham. Here's Abraham, our forefather. Abraham was known to be a man of kindness. Chesed, kindness. The attribute of Abraham was kindness. He was kind to the whole world. Any strangers walking around, come in, please. One of the big commandments of the Torah is Hachnasat Orchim, having guests. You know, something today which we're very weak on. We have to improve ourselves in terms of having guests. Again, you've got to know who the guests are first before you have them. But you've got to have guests. Bring people into your house, friends, bring them in, have a cup of coffee, a cup of tea. It's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah of Hachnasat Orchim, you're having guests. Abraham could cope with the whole world. Sometimes it's easier to cope with the whole world than cope with your own relatives. Where do we see this? Abraham. The biggest failures of Abraham in coping with other people are with his own relatives. Who? Number one, his brother-in-law, Lot. Now, Lot was not only his brother-in-law, because Abraham married his niece. Sarah was Abraham's niece. She was the daughter of his brother, Haran. And Lot was her brother. So Lot was related to him twice over. Lot was his nephew, and Lot was his brother-in-law. Not only that, but Abraham never had any children that time. Who was going to inherit Abraham? Abraham was old already. He was in his 80s. Who was going to inherit Abraham? Lot was going to inherit Abraham. And yet we find that what? They have a fight. And Abraham tells Lot, if you go north, I'll go south. If you go south, I'll go north. Take your pick. We can't live together. It's impossible. Come on. What's going on over here? The brother-in-law. That's the problem. The problem is, you can get along with the whole world, but to have positive relationships with the whole inside the family. Within the family is much harder than have relationships. Why is it much harder to have relationships in the family? So there's a couple of reasons. One reason is, you have the general rule, absence makes the heart grow fonder. You see a guy once every 20 years, okay, not bad, you like him. You see a guy day in, day out, it becomes a bit problematic. So you saw his brother-in-law day in, day out. His brother-in-law's part of the household, but there are other problems. It was a major, the commentaries tell us, it was a major ethical problem. What was the major ethical problem? So it says the fight was about the shepherds were fighting. Why were the shepherds fighting? Because Lot's shepherds were not careful about where they grazed the cattle. They had cattle, they were shepherds. They said the whole land belongs to us. God promised the land to Abraham, therefore it's ours. We don't care. Someone else is living there and it's his land, we don't care. We're going to graze our land in that, we're going to graze our cattle in that land. Abraham was very, very careful not to rob, not to steal. And therefore he told his shepherds, don't you dare graze your cattle in other people's fields. They saw Lot's shepherds were not careful. His shepherds were careful. They were always getting into fights. He tells Lot, I don't want to be associated with you. Your value system is a different value system than my value system. I don't want my reputation to be tarnished. My reputation is not tarnished by a stranger. My reputation is going to be tarnished by my relatives. If my brother-in-law, my nephew does something, then it's me. He's my relative. I'm responsible. So therefore, that's the other reason why Abraham and Lot split. We find there's another issue of relationships is value. If two people don't have the same value system, it's very, very hard to get along. It's very hard to respect. You have your idea, I have my idea, we'll get along somehow. You know, the word somehow is critical. Somehow they'll get along. Don't ask me how, but somehow. Where else do we find this? Sarah and Hagar. Who is Hagar? Sarah, Abraham's wife, couldn't have a child. So she persuades him to take another wife. Who you take in those days, today what we call it today? Pardon? Surrogate motherhood. Today we call it surrogate motherhood. So in those days they didn't call it surrogate motherhood, they called it a concubine. That was the word for it in those days. The Torah calls it a pelegish. She persuaded him to take another wife. Takes another wife, what happens? This girl who was a servant refused to give up rights to that child. They had the case, Baby M. Remember the Baby M case? What happened was they hired the surrogate to have the baby. And when the surrogate had the baby, she fell in love with the baby. No, it's my baby. He signed the document. He signed all the legal titles giving up the baby for adoption. No, it's my baby. They went to court, and that was the case over there with Sarah and Hagar. But not only did it lead to fights over who the child was, Hagar says, my child. So Sarah says, okay, take the child and get out. Get out of here. Scram. Not only did it lead to fights on whose child it was, it also led to fights whose husband it was. So Sarah says, I'm the main wife. Hagar says, no, I have the child. You're nobody. Get out of here. I have the child. He's my husband. Because he's going to inherit. The child's going to inherit. Who's the mother of the child that's going to inherit? Me. You're not the main wife. I am. So it led to other problems. So jealousies. We see over here jealousies. The Mishnah tells us in Pirkei Avot, three things destroy a person. And these three things also destroy relationships. And this is a very, very important point in human relationships in general. There are three major ingredients to destruction. What are the three major ingredients to destruction? Number one, Mishnah says, jealousy. Jealousy can destroy everything. We find this, we're going to talk about Joseph and his brothers. So what jealousy? Jealousy is the roots of destruction of all relationships. One is jealous of the other, can destroy everything. Number two is, desire. Desire, how many marriages dissolve because of, which commandment is it? Seventh commandment. The seventh commandment is adultery, not committing adultery. Seventh commandment. Why? And the Bible reinforces it, number 10. It is not to covet one's neighbor's house, one neighbor's property, one neighbor's wife, anything that belongs to the neighbor. Why? Because that's going to destroy a person's relationships. Not only is it going to destroy a person's relationships, but it's the next commandment after do not murder. Why? Because it could lead to murder. So desire could lead to murder. A person desires, in many cases, and this is well documented. A lot of murders are called, what are they called? Murders of passion. Crimes of passion. What do you mean crimes of passion? Because there's desire involved. Desire can break relationships. And the third thing is honor. A person desires honor. The person desires honor. You know, it's interesting, all the things for a person to desire, it's very fascinating. I can understand desiring tangible things. Material things, right? I see $1,000, okay, I desire $1,000. I see good food, desire good food. I see a good house, beautiful. To desire honor? What is honor after all? Honor is something which is intangible. Honor is something which is, How would you define honor? How would you measure honor? It's an intangible, it's esoteric. It's something you can't put your finger on. People honor me. I live for the honor. What are you getting out of it? Oh, it's just purely psychological. So what is it? It's something that's intangible. It's something which doesn't really exist. It's a surreality. It's not reality, it's surreality. And yet people fight, kill men for honor. Where do we see this in the Torah? So it tells us, we're going to celebrate it in Purim. Purim story. Who is the villain of the Purim story? Huh? Haman. Haman, Haman. Haman was the villain of the Purim story. What happens with Haman? Haman is second in command to the king of 127 states. How many states are we in? 50? Yeah? So far. 50 states of America right now? He had 127 states. The Bible tells us, from India on the one side, all the way to Ethiopia in Africa. All 127 states he ruled over. He was the second in command to the king. Now the king in those days was a guy called Ahasuerus, who was so involved in his hedonistic pleasures, he didn't have time to rule the country. So really, who is the true ruler of the country? His second in command. Haman was indispensable. The king Ahasuerus. And Haman goes home. And the queen invited him to a party. And he goes home, he tells his wife, and he tells his friends, he has a massive party himself. And he boasts and he brags. He says, look at me. I'm the highest in command, and the king honors me, the queen honors me. Look how much honor I have. Look how much wealth I have. Look how many children I have. Look how much power I have. And then he says, something really amazing. He says, V'chol zeh, whatever I have, einenu shaveh li, is not worth anything. Why not? Because when I think of Mordechai the Jew, who does not give me any honor, does not even bow down to me, he doesn't even budge from his chair when I pass by, whatever I have is worth zero. Why? Because one Jew will not honor me. Mordechai didn't bow down to Haman. The country said, why? Haman had an idol around his neck. Mordechai didn't want to appear to be bowing down to the idol. Mordechai refused to bow down to Haman. So Haman has everything in the world. 127 provinces he's ruling over. What didn't he have? He didn't get honor for one person. What happened? Whatever he had is worth zero. And this is a very important lesson for all of us. We're not so extreme as Haman, but sometimes something small can come along and ruin a person's day. You heard of that phrase? Ruin a person's day? Right? What happens? On a miniature scale, we can be like Haman. Something small. Everything is going fine. All of a sudden, out of the blue, something small comes and ruins the person's day. But it's something small. If you put everything in perspective, it's zero. The rabbis say, a person seeking honor can destroy that person. It destroyed Haman, made him plan to kill Mordechai, and he didn't realize Mordechai was the one who saved the king's life. If you're going to kill Mordechai, that assumes, the king assumes that you're going to plot against him as well. If you're going to kill someone who saved the king's life, that assumes, the king assumes that you're planning to kill the king. So we find honor also, running after honor, is one of the major problems in society. You have people running after positions in public office. Why? I guarantee it's not because of the money. Why? Because the payment you get to being president of the United States, you get much more by being a president of a large corporation. If you're a CEO of a large corporation, you make many, many times more than you make as a president of the United States. Why do people want to do it? What do they want? Power, prestige, and honor. More than anything, to fly in US-1. Oh, that must be really tremendous honor. To go past, there we saw the picture of the president, the new president, walking past the soldiers. You see that picture? See the honor. Wow, that's a lot of honor. How many people would kill and fight and maim for honor? I mean, we can't even imagine. If we're not on that level, we're still at the bottom of the chain. We're still looking for our daily bread. We're still looking for survival. But people have everything. And you know what? What's next on the list? What's next on the list is honor. And that honor can destroy relationships. And so let's talk about the positive now. We talked about the negative enough. Let's talk about the positive. Let's talk a bit about the positive. One of the most important things in relationships is an idea which is called Derech Eretz. What is Derech Eretz? Anyone know? It's loosely translated as manners. Manners. Derech Eretz. So literally it means the way of the world. Derech, the way, Eretz, of the land. The way of the land. We find King Solomon says in Proverbs, its ways, Derechecha Derechei Noam. The ways of the Torah are ways of pleasantness. I mean, this is something very, very important to remember, because unfortunately this has been corrupted. When we see rabbis fighting and we see our leaders fighting, that's not the way of the Torah. Mishlei, King Solomon says, the ways of the Torah are pleasantness. The whole Mitzvotei Shalom and all its paths are peace. The ways of the Torah are pleasantness and peace. And it's very hard, and obviously that a bit of jealousy gets in, a bit of desire gets in, a bit of honor seeking gets in, everything is corrupted. Even the greatest people can be corrupted very easily. We're human beings. Everyone is human being. So its ways, King Solomon tells us, the ways of the Torah are pleasantness and its paths are peace. In other words, if you want success in your relationships, what a person has to strive for is Derech Eretz, which is manners. So we're going to define, it's a very broad term, not just manners. It's a very, very broad term. Derech Eretz is a very, very broad term. Derech Eretz leads to peace. peace,